I'm Lauren.
And I'm Ashley. And this, guys, is Nip Tuck Pod.
We are your girl chat. We say the things you want to hear, the things that you're thinking but you don't want to say out loud. And we're all about being strong, aspirational women who basically don't give a...
Lauren, anyway, if you want unfiltered chat, amazing beauty and product recommendations, then look no further, guys. This is the podcast where you will get all of the girly chat.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tell me who the most famous person you've kissed is.
Oh my God, I don't even know.
Don't be coy now, Ulrika. I've seen all your bits.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Vicky Patterson, The Secret 2. This week, I am joined by none other than TV legend, yummy mummy, and all-round sexy Swede. It's Ulrika Johnson, everybody! Woo-hoo!
I was just going to say, who's that you're talking about? But, yeah, far from yummy mummy, but...
you lush cunt!
Oh, I love... You know that's my favourite word as well, so... Absolutely.
I thought I'd open it up, just relax you straight away,
get it in there.
Milo's coming to say hello, Ulrika.
Of course he is.
Yeah, he's fucking massive. Straight on the brand new sofa, so he doesn't give a fuck.
No, they don't. It's their house.
How are your dogs?
I had three bulldogs right up until Christmas, and I lost two just after Christmas. So now I've only got Leo, who is four. And he's got leukemia, so I'm not having much luck. I know. So,
Ulrika, there is one. You can have this one if you want him.
He's the beast.
This is because I dared to have a bacon sandwich without him.
Yeah. And the thing is, if you dare to have a life that's sort of other than them, I'm dog sitting today, so I'm looking after my best friend's bulldog. And of course, when another dog comes in the house, she thinks it's like this dog Bella. She thinks it's fantastic. It's like being in Hamleys. So she's just running around and she's relentless. And last time I had her, I had a meeting and she was climbing on top of my printer and I'm going, excuse me. Then eventually she lay down for 2 minutes and did the worst stinking fart and I literally had to sit in the whole thing going. But I don't mind a bit of chaos, you know. It's kind of, do you know what I mean? It's nice chaos, isn't it? It's loving chaos. So
that's it. Beautifully chaotic, having a puppy. I definitely describe it as that. So, right, let's go straight back to the beginning. It took all of my like inner strength not to go, oh, rikiki, you must be sick to the back teeth of hearing that, mate.
No, I'm not actually. It really doesn't happen very much nowadays because everybody who used to watch that is so old. So it doesn't happen very often. And so when it does, I think it's quite kind of cute. Again, like it's something that I love doing and whatever. So it's, I think the worst thing for me was when I started out and I was doing weather presenting and people always go, oi, Eureka, what's the weather like? And you're like, have you got a fucking window? Just look out of it. Me. Yeah, I know. You're trying to compose yourself and go, yes, that's right, girl next door. Yes, it's lovely. Or you got the weather wrong this morning, didn't you? And you're like, give me strength. But yeah, no, I don't mind.
How did you get into being a weather girl, though? Do you have to have specific weathery credentials?
Well, so I'm not...
Or did you just look good pointing at the British Isles?
I was just going over there and over here. I wish. No, I'm not a meteorologist. That takes years and years and years. But I was working as a production assistant and then they had some on-screen auditions. I was dreadful. And so then I went away and I worked for a satellite channel presenting the weather for them. And then I came back to TVAM and gave them what you used to have in those days, which was a VHS tape of various reports that I'd done. And then
like an audition tape.
Showing like, here I am, look, telling you that it's going to be foggy and frosty. And I spent about 3 months going to the London Weather Centre so that I could learn to understand the charts and understand what they were talking about, what all the symbols were, but not to forecast. So I could interpret, but not forecast. So yeah, some knowledge. And it was interesting, actually, when they sort of first initially said that to me, I was like, oh, weather. And then I got really into it. So I kind of became quite a bit obsessive about it, I think.
Become a bit of a cloud nerd.
Yeah. Forgotten it all now, obviously.
But that's really interesting, Ulrika. Like, forgive us for making a snap judgment, but I just assumed, because you still are, but fuck me, mate. I remember back in the day, like, you were just the fittest bird. You were such a wicked bit of kit. I just thought you walked in one day and they were like, get her on screen, but you actually grafted, mate.
Yes, yeah, I did. And it was quite nice having done the working as a production assistant beforehand. So I had a good feel for what went on behind the scenes in TV. And then there was many years ago an industrial dispute and all the sort of secretarial staff were asked to do technical jobs. So I was rolling the auto cue, and we all had different roles. And it was, you know, that was the best thing for me, is feeling that I have an understanding of what everybody's role is in TV and then go on screen. So I think that was really, really like valuable. Yeah.
I suppose then, you know how hard everyone's working, you've got a good understanding of what goes into it.
Yeah.
Like, you don't just show up and point. Like, no. you paid your dues, mate.
Yeah, no, exactly. And then my first husband, it's been quite a lot, he was a cameraman. So he was like on that side of the screen, and I'd be on the other side. So I had a real, you know, a true appreciation of really what was needed and what was required and the hours worked. So, I mean, I'm sure at times I might have been an arsehole or whatever, but I think for the most part, I always have great respect for the crew and, you know, always feel like they shouldn't be overlooked because they're, you know, probably, you know, the bigger part of what goes on, as you know, because we just go, and then all behind the scenes, people have been working, you know, incredibly hard. So
it always amazes me when I work with people and they treat the crew badly, like in any way, whether it's like a researcher, a runner, a PD, a director, or anything. And I just think, do you know who's going to edit you? Like, do you know who has their final say? Like, do you know who's going to, like, in future say, oh, I worked with her, she was a dickhead, and like, who's going to help further your career? Because it's not like the other celebs you're working with.
No.
Like, it's the people who are like making the shows. And I'm always like utterly bamboozled when people don't give the crew the utmost respect.
No, and I don't get that too either. It's a little bit like, you know, when you're in a restaurant and people treat waiters and waitresses badly, and I think they're going to just spit in your food now, basically.
Oh, 110%. Like, you're getting bogies in your potatoes.
Yeah. I want them to give me a nice experience. You want, and also, I guess I am a bit of a people pleaser, so I want everybody to sort of get on, and I want there to be a good atmosphere. And so it's kind of like you do your bit in sort of trying to make that happen, I guess. Yeah. But yeah, no, I've seen you in action, and that pleased me greatly, because I always hoped that you would be exactly what I was hoping you would be, and that is just super lovely to everybody, and that's so refreshing. It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen all the time, and it doesn't happen with people who have made it very quickly or are suddenly famous. Not saying you've been around now for years.
Oh, she's an owl boot, Ulrika.
It's so important. You're kind of interested in how things are made, aren't you? And what, you know, sort of not just editorial questions, but like, oh God, like, that's what they're doing. Oh, that's it. Oh, that's a new bit of kit. Oh, look at that. You know, whatever. Things have moved on a bit since my day when cameras ran on coal.
Well, like, regardless, Ulrika, you must have been doing something right, because you've been in the industry a fair while, you're still grafting, you're still doing well, you're still one of our most recognisable faces. Like, what was it like being in, like, TV's heyday in the 90s? Like, you couldn't turn on your fucking telly on, like, any night of the week without seeing you. Like, what was it like?
Gosh, do you know what, Vicky? It's the first time anyone's really asked me that question. And I was 21 when I started. So I started working in TV when I was 19, but I was 21 when I started on screen. So you might imagine,
so
you know,
young.
Yeah, so young. And you're doing early mornings when I was doing the weather on breakfast TV.
What time did you have to get up for that then?
About 3:30.
Shit, mate. See, like, I'm always in awe of people who do breakfasty stuff, like Lorraine Kelly and that. I just think, fuck,
killer.
Hell, give this,
it is a killer.
Give this woman a year off.
Yeah.
It's
and it
early.
Does. It took me about a year, because I did that for 3.5 years, and it took me about a year for it to come, get out of my system. That whole, your body clock is messed up and you feel like you have jet lag every day. But I think because it happened, although it didn't happen quickly, it happened for me young, I guess. And then I left that and then went to do Gladiators, and that, of course, then became a really big show. And so you're swept up in it, and but for me, it was always about doing the background work and doing, so I would write the scripts for Gladiators, and I would.
Would you?
Yeah, because I didn't, you know, with it. First series, they had a script writer in, and they were saying really sort of typical ITV things like, oh, Cinderella, she's going to a ball. And I was like, oh, I'd never say that. Like, I need to say something that I would say. So I just rewrite everything and give my lines to John Fashanu or whatever, and just work it all out and do little links. But yeah, so for me, it was all about putting in the graph. I think I was just so stuck in and so into doing my work and feeling really blessed that I was able to, and that things were going well, that I didn't really stop to look and go, who's that person? What's happening there? You're just in it, aren't you? You're just living it, and it's going fast. And, you know, so it's kind of, it's a really, really, it's only now when I look back and I think, gosh, 33 years in the business, and I go and I think, I forgot I did that I did that, because you just do it and then crack on, I guess. Yeah,
I think, like, you have to, sometimes you can't see, and I always get this saying wrong, but I think you can't see the wood for the trees.
That's right,
like, sometimes, like, when you're in some, I remember the year after I won The Jungle, and, like, you're in such high demand, and, like, you're on everything. And I remember I was, like, in the Amalfi Coast making a show for This Morning with Fern, and then the next thing I was, like, making a panel show with Eamon Holmes and Kelly Brook, and, like, lurching from this and Aunt Summer's campaigns and everything, and it was all amazing. But, like, you're so busy and so in the thick of it that actually, like, you don't take a second to smell the roses or appreciate it. I think, God, like, I'm doing stuff that loads of people would dream of doing, and actually I'm doing the stuff I dreamed of doing. Just so, it's just so intense. So, like, since lockdown in particular, I've took some real time to take, like, me foot off the gas a little bit and be appreciative for the things that I've got. Because sometimes you just don't have time when you're in the thick of it, do you?
No, I think that's right. And I think certainly in our business, as you know, you have to take the opportunities. You don't have, you know, you go, if I don't take that, I mean, so you're in a position of having choice, and I was in that position as well. And I think that, and that makes things a little bit easier. So you're not just saying yes to everything, but you are still planning and thinking ahead. And yeah, I think I got to about 7-8 years ago when I just sort of felt that I needed to take a step back. I just didn't feel that I knew where I belonged, because going hand in hand with, you know, I guess a high profile career was all the press and media
that comes with it,
attention.
Yeah.
And you don't get a break from that. And I felt like I don't know where I belong anymore. So I sort of started working, you know, with a career really young, and then settled down at that point as well. Married for the first time at 21, and then had my first child at 27. So it was career or family, career, family. There was no, like, Ulrika in there, I don't think. It was just like, you're kind of almost a machine. You're like, the pressure is on you all the time. There's no time to sort of navel gaze and go, oh, like, and reflect perhaps. And so I did... I did do that. I took just took a step away from it, took a step back. Like, I don't know where I want to be and what part I want to play. And also becoming older, obviously, then is also another issue, because you don't get as much work coming in. And so that's something new to get used to. And yeah, it's just a bizarre time. But I think it's really good if you can do that now, because you're like, well, I don't even know if you've reached the top of your career, but you're still climbing, and you've got loads of things that you're going to crack on with. But it's good to take that little step back and have a little check-in with yourself.
So I think, like, what you had, which I haven't got, sort of thing, is, like, you had the settling down really early as well. Mm. And, like, I can't imagine having to give myself, like, because when I was, like, when I left the jungle, when I was focused on my career, which I still, like, I felt like I had to give all of myself to it in order for it to be successful. Mm. I can't imagine, and I know loads of women do it, but, like, how, like, splitting me time between having a family, having a husband, and also being really successful and really busy, I imagine I just constantly feel stressed out, tired, conflicted, and like I wasn't doing my best for either of them.
I think you've put it really well for someone who hasn't even lived that. But I think that's the feeling all the time, that you're always chasing something, in the sense that you're never quite, you know, I would never, not so much have guilt about being away from my children, because I was working. So I was working for us. I always felt I could judge, but I felt that I should be with them. And then work would be very sort of like all or nothing. And constantly, there's constantly something. And I've been freelance all my life. I've never had contracts with anybody. I've just literally not had the safety of going, except now, actually.
Yeah.
But that's right. That's writing. And I guess in many respects, there's always been more so that conversation around women than around men. Yeah. So we talk a lot more about, women's obligations, because women have only just in the past few decades, obviously, been coming out to work and having careers. Well, not past few decades, but longer than that. But and so the pressure's always on us. And I always felt, you know, I come from Sweden, a very egalitarian country. Everything's very fair. Everything's very even. And I'd be like, why are they always like, why is it always about me and judging me as a mother? Like, hang on, what about the dads, or what about this, that, and the other? So you have the added pressure of being a woman mother, and then having your career, and then trying to, manage either a marriage, or, you know, everybody, I guess, has to manage relationships. But yeah, it was pretty, it was quite a lot.
It's quite a lot, especially when you are still so young.
Yeah.
That's mad, that. I've never been to Sweden. I think I have ever been to Sweden. No, I don't think I've ever been to Sweden. I've been to Copenhagen.
Yeah.
That's Denmark, right? Yeah. Okay. So that's different. But like, I just imagine Sweden to be like really clean. Everyone just look like you, absolute straight tens. And everyone, for some reason in my head's really polite and just like, oh, no, you go first. No, you go first. Like,
oh, well, that's interesting. That's probably the one thing. The Swedes are really funny. The Swedes are really direct. So they don't do like, that's what I found when I came to England, is people would say, oh, would you mind if you, could you possibly maybe take that bottle? Possibly. I mean, don't worry if you can't, da-da-da. Whereas in Sweden, they go, can you take that bottle? Take that bottle. Photocopy that. And I'd be like, oh my God, I've offended somebody. And it wasn't that. So the Swedes are very plain speaking and direct, with very few kind of courtesies. And they're kind of, whereas the English, I think, I would almost say this, the English are warmer and more open to have a crazy conversation with a random person in the supermarkets, whereas the Swedes would just go, you weirdo. Mm.
Really?
Yeah. But they are obviously friendly, and they all speak good English. So it's like, you'd be all right when you go there. And yeah, a lot of the guys are very good looking.
Oh, I can imagine.
Maybe a little trip to Stockholm.
Yeah, you'll have to take us on the lash.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Right, so Gladiators was my like all-time favorite show when I was growing up. Like, I do you know what, mate? I, even when my mum and dad would let us, would watch Shooting Stars as well because they used to love it. But Gladiators was just the best. You must have some canny good stories from that.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I mean, it was just. I mean, first up, you know, they brought the show over from the States, and we ITV ended up making, or London Weekend Television as it was known then, ended up making a bigger show of it than it had been in the States. But of course, we were filming it in at the National Indoor Arena in Birmingham. I don't know what it's called now, but that big indoor arena in Birmingham.
I think it's the NEC.
No, it's next to the NEC.
Is it?
So it's next. So it's been quite, whatever. Mm. And of course, none of the local people knew what it was because it hadn't been on screen yet. So we would have, like, you'd invite people in for free because you couldn't charge them because it's for a TV recording. And we'd have these big, muscly guys. And I honestly was clueless. I hadn't got a clue what was happening, what we were doing, because it was all described to you. And if someone says to you, we're going to get two big, muscly men to beat the shit out of each other with cotton buds, you'd go, right, yes, prime time, that is. I just was, I had no idea.
I smell a smash.
Yes, exactly. I was thinking, well, I left my job at TVAM at doing the weather for this job. So if it hadn't gone well, I might have been buggered. But so the audience that came in was very, there was only very few in the audience because they were like, it was the summer holidays and they were like, oh, there's something going on at the National Indoor Arena, blah, blah, blah. They came up. So when I was doing like links to the camera, they had to keep moving the audience around to follow it, to make it look, because the arena was virtually empty. And then word spread in Birmingham that there's this amazing showdown, this massive spectacle going on. And then we couldn't, we became oversubscribed and they had to issue tickets for people. But yeah, and also another funny story was that I think the third year we were doing it, whatever else it was. Well, first of all, the gladiators themselves had to have bodyguards.
Surely that feels like...
Yes, that's like it's really bizarre. But they became so popular that they would have so many fans or whatever else. And then they'd be transported in a coach from the arena to our hotel. But I was left to walk on my own in the dark. They're like, yeah, no, she's all right. Whatever. And I'm like, okay. I think the third year I was pregnant and I was like, well, but could somebody maybe give me a little bit of lift or maybe hold my hand across the bridge there?
You are a tiny little woman, and let me get this straight. We've got fellas like fucking Wolf.
Oh, no.
And like Hunter just like, well, the bodyguards actually bigger than them.
No, they were just like security, weren't they? So they were like, yeah, it was just to sort of keep people away. And I guess for them, you can imagine their entire lives have been about creating their bodies.
Yeah.
And then something comes along like Gladiators and they become massive stars and egos just overnight.
Yeah, I can imagine. Because I feel like I've gone out with a fair few boys who've like been very interested, like very obsessed with their image, the way they look, their body. And like, I'm making a sweeping generalization, so anyone who listens to this and thinks, oh, that's not true, please don't be too offended. I feel like when you spend that long cultivating your body, working on your muscles, it's because you're lacking in another area. Yeah. That's what I tend to have found. And I'm not being crass. I'm not saying...
No, I don't think that's...
Little, do you know what I mean? I'm not saying they've got little dicks. What I'm saying is like...
No, I understand. And I think also, it obviously becomes a kind of addiction because it becomes an obsession, maybe. Addiction, maybe too strong a word. But
it's
I know
anything like that, Ulrika. The more you get, the more you want.
Yeah. And the more changes you see. I mean, I went through a phase of being really, really into fitness. I can't remember when that was. And it became sort of like therapy. I'm like, no, I need to go for my run. I need to go for my run. And it became slightly obsessional. But for them, obviously, they are creating something extraordinary because they're not ordinary bodies. And I've always felt kind of slightly wary of obviously I dated Hunter for about a year and a half, and away from the show, he was like amazing and the sweetest man. Oh God, he was only 22, I think, when I got together with him. Poor boy.
Go on, yeah, girl, you're a cougar.
Get in.
I'm a cougar.
Get in. God, but while we were doing the shows, he was so focused. He was just a different person. You just couldn't. Mm. I couldn't almost like not go near him because he'd be like, "Someone put egg yolk in my scrambled eggs."
Having a mental breakdown, yeah, or a little spot of yolk. But then it's even worse for them because, like, the lads I went out, the lads I'm talking about, whatever, like, it was just for them an aesthetic. So, you know, they wanted to look a certain way for a certain image. But for the gladiators, it hit, their job hinged on it, essentially. Yeah. Like, they couldn't just gain half a stone and ITV would be like, oh, that's fine, you can be our, like, slightly rounder gladiator. Like, it was so... So intrinsically linked to what they did. So I'm not surprised they become obsessive. What was it like for the women? Do you feel like the women felt like they were under loads of pressure to be like sexy and fit and glamorous and everything?
Yeah, that's actually quite interesting because, you know, a few of them were gymnasts and some of them were sort of bodybuilders. But I think that the station, the channel created, and this is a good few years ago, so I'm not sure if the same type of pressure might be allowed to be put on them. But even I think for me in the first series, they wanted me in like a leotard and leggings, and I was so uncomfortable, and a push-up bra, and I was so uncomfortable.
Did they? So they wanted you like almost in the same outfit as
so that I looked kind of slightly sporty, and then standing in amongst the audience. And I think the second year, we just, me and the Stephen Adner, the wardrobe guy, just said, look, I'm just so deeply uncomfortable in this, put me in something flowing and whatever. But I think for the female gladiators, definitely it was all about, you know, they were basically, you know, effectively they were having to glue the bottoms of their outfits onto their bums because they were so kind of small, they would just like disappear, and if they were wrestling, you might get an eyeful.
No one wants to see a flap on primetime TV.
No, nobody does. Or do they?
I don't know. I don't want to see any flaps.
Not a family. not on a family show, no, for sure. Yeah, no, I think it was, and it was all very kind of glamorous. You know, it was a heavy makeup and it was all that kind of, spectacle and testosterone-y and sexually charged. And yet a family show.
It was madness to me. Like, it was a sexy, sexy show. And, like, I swear, it must have, like, not to be too weird, but it must have definitely gave so many, like, young lads and young lasses their sexual awakening. Like, 110%, mate. Like, I remember watching it and being so conflicted because, like, the way I felt about Jet and Lightning and everything,
I was
like, oh, my God, like, it was, you half wanted to be the women, you wanted to date the men. Like, it was just a sexy show. And that... I'm so jealous, like, you got to be a part of it. Like, I just feel like it was... Did you ever feel when you were doing it, like, God, like, I feel like, look at these amazing bodies, like, I should look like that too? Like, did you ever feel, like, any pressure yourself? Or were you just like, no, I'm here to do a different job and I'm smashing that?
Yeah, no, I felt really far removed from it. And I would look at them with total admiration because I think what they've gone through and what they were putting themselves through. But I also kind of looked at them thinking, that's a ridiculous body. Like that, even, you know, just like it was extraordinary. But I felt like, yeah, I felt very much like we were almost doing two different shows. Like I was doing this bit, this serious bit or the sort of interviewing bit. And then they were doing that. All that and all the music and that came with it. But no, I never ever, the fitness thing or whatever, never sort of really hit me at that point or interested me. I think I was so focused on the job that I had to do because you're recording it as if it's live, you know, when you've got sort of 7,000-8,000 people, you know, sitting there, you don't want to be fucking up your lines three times because they just start going, oh.
Do they as well? Oh my God, live TV is the worst.
Well, and this wasn't live, but it was a live, you know, it's a live spectacle, isn't it? So I do remember one time, this is quite cute actually, because I was brought up in live TV, so I always I call myself one take Johnson. Like, give myself one take, and that's all you get. That's all you get.
No. I've given myself this name.
I've given myself that name. I know. And I remember going out there one time. We'd been doing this show for a few years, and I went out, and I always open the show. Good evening, and a very warm welcome to the National Indoor Arena here at Birmingham. Blah 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 blah. And then my spiel, whatever I'd written, did it tripped up on a word or whatever else. I was like, okay,
we've all been
everybody
there.
reset. Ulrika goes to the back, come out again, way cheering, line again, trip up again. Like, when you trip up a second time, you immediately go into a, right, I can't do this, like, what's happening?
You're in your head.
Oh,
riddled with self-doubt. Yeah. You're crap, you don't know why you've got the job, you're gonna get sacked. And that's it, isn't it?
You know you can't go out there a third time and do it. Anyway, backstage, one of the sound guys, because obviously we were hanging out, all of us, a lot of the time, because there's a lot of hanging around at those shows. Ulrika, would you like a little bit of water? And he'd got a hip flask with some whiskey in it, and he just let me have a swig, went out there, and
nailed it.
But I think it was like he saw what was happening, and he's like, you just need to just take a fucking chill pill now, because you've done this 1,000 times. So thank god.
Oh, I love little acts of kindness like that from the crew. I mean, honestly, this goes back, mate, to like why I adore like the crew who work on shows so much. Like, they're so unfucking appreciated, for starters. Like, everyone gives like the presenters a round of applause and everything, and it's bullshit. Like, they're the ones who work hard. And I remember being in the jungle, right? And it was like my first proper massive gig. And I was so desperate to do well and be myself and, you know, show everybody the real me and not the person that they thought I was. And I was almost getting in my own head a little bit. And like, you know, when you just, it's not like you make an episode and then you see everyone's reaction and you think, I'm nailing this. Like, you're in there.
You have no idea.
No clue. You're in that little bubble, like, you know. So anyway, there was a guy I knew from me Geordie Shore days, and I won't say too much because he's probably working on the show and probably would get really told off for this, so he will remain nameless. Mystery hero.
Okay.
And I went to him, I was like, am I, like, it was about 2.5 weeks in, and the boot offs had started, and I'd got through a couple but just still didn't know, and I was like, am I doing okay? Like, would you just tell us, like, do people like us? Like, is everything all right? Like, I was so full of anxiety. And he went, you know, we can't tell you anything like that, Fitty. And I was like, no, I know, absolutely. Sorry, I'm sorry for asking, you know? And then he was like, you have to do your little, like, so we're at the Dingo Dollar, like, you talk to the camera bit. And he got his notepad out and he went, right, Fitty, so we're going to read this bit and we're going to do this and the next we're going to move on to that. And he's written on the notepad, you're doing brilliantly. Oh, no. I could cry still thinking about it. It was just that little act of like kindness, mate, that just made it reassured us so much, and it got us through the rest of the series. It really did.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. But no, I know, and you absolutely have no bloody idea at all. I was a bit like that when I was in Celebrity Big Brother, because I hadn't.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah,
I had no idea. I was up for eviction every time, and I kept telling my friend. I couldn't tell. Like, I was saying, like, get everyone to vote me out, because I just obviously didn't want to be there, and I kept being put up for eviction, and I was like. And then just before the end of the show, they bring you into the diary room and they say, look, this is the final now. And there's only five, whatever it is. You're like, what happens if you're the winner? You come out and there'll be pyrotechnics and da da da. And I'm like, yeah, well, I didn't listen, because I was like, well, that's obviously not me and all that sort of stuff. And I had no idea. I didn't even know why I was in the final. And then when they announced my name, I went, fuck, that's a mistake. Like, because I thought I was just like the most hated person there, rather. But then one of the sort of editors had said to me afterwards, he said, there was a moment in the diary room when I had said, because I think I was the only girl left, and I said, oh, I'm doing it for the girls. And he said, that's what clinched it. All the women will have gone. But yeah, no, it is hard. That's such a lovely story that you had there. That's nice.
Right, Ulrika, before I let you go, because it is the end of part one, I have to ask, was everyone shagging each other on Gladiators?
Apparently, not me, but I mean, not that they weren't shagging me, but I wasn't shagging it. I was learning my lines. I was writing my lines and learning my lines. But I think in the first year that we did it, because they took over a whole floor in the hotel. there was loads of jumping from bed to bed. Yeah. And there's
corridor creeping.
Yeah. And there was one story about one female gladiator when somebody, because somebody sort of picked her up on it. She shall remain nameless. And she said, someone said, for fuck's sake, you know, fucking hell, what was it like? You had fucking five people coming and going in your room last night. She went, no, four. I was like, okay, at that point, maybe just stop at no. don't. So, yeah, so apparently, the hotel had to stop them, had to ask them to stop wearing, using fake tanks. It just ruined the sheets in the hotel, because of course it's like anyway, yeah, there's loads of stories.
We've all been there, mate. Yeah. I bet you that would make quite a unique work of art.
Yeah, I was going to say, a nice little collage of sheets and rolling around.
Oh, yeah. I bet you could flog that for a little bit these days. It'd be like a part of pop culture.
Yeah.
Two gladiators rolling around.
Can you imagine? Bloody hell.
Ulrika, will you come back in part two, please? I promise we'll talk about something other than gladiators. I've had me fail, I promise.
Definitely, of course I will.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.